Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. My good friend Ron Cook in just a few moments, but first, our play-by-play call of the day. The Dodgers nursing a half-game lead in the West suddenly opened up to a game and a half by beating the Rockies in extra innings.
And a high fly ball to left. The Dodgers are going to win it on a walk-off by Chris Taylor. 3-2, and the Dodgers lead the Rockies by a game and a half with 10 to play. Taylor, the walk-off winner.
Charlie Steiner with a call on the Dodgers radio network last night, and as he outlined, it's now a game and a half over Colorado. Very pleased to be joined by somebody I have great respect for and consider a friend. That is Ron Cook. Cookie, how you been?
Oh, Steve, a little busy around here. The Steelers are making things interesting.
They are, and that goes in line with your column about the Steelers. So let's start with this, and then we'll get into the column. As someone who is an intent observer of what the Steelers do when you watch Mike Tomlin, does he have a handle on his team?
Well, man, it's easy to say no at this point with what's going on with Antonio and Le'Veon Bell. And the guy's won a lot of games here, more than any coach but Belichick since he's been here, but they've kind of underachieved in the postseason. They've only won 3 playoff games since 2010. A lot of people think that, he's too close to the players. I don't know, but he lets Antonio do basically whatever he wants, and that's a problem. And Antonio didn't show up for work on Monday. Tomlin said he talked to him yesterday. There was discipline involved, but as far as I know, he's going to play on Monday night at Tampa. It's just a tough situation here. This isn't the first time with Antonio. He's a great player, but he's been a headache here at times way too often.
Okay, so let's get to this. How tough a decision, if you're in his shoes, how tough is it the decision between a guy who just openly just didn't show up for you and just blew you off on Monday versus the obligation to the other 52 guys because you're already down a guy?
Well, there's no doubt it's a tough line to walk. I mean, are you looking short-term versus long-term? They definitely have a better chance to win in Tampa Monday if he plays, but by the same token, what message do you send to the other players when you allow a guy just not to show up for work? Sunday, it looked like he tapped out mentally because he wasn't getting the ball. He had a sideline blow-up with his offensive coordinator. He sends out his trade me tweet. And I don't think he meant that he wanted traded, but it's just been one thing after another with him going back a couple years ago with a Facebook Live thing in the Kansas City playoff game when he put Tomlin's post-game speech out there and violated the sanctity of the locker room. I look at Belichick in New England. That's what everybody here says. What would he do? Well, he didn't play Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl last year. It might have cost him a Super Bowl championship. Did he make a point with his team for the long haul? I don't know. That's a tough line for a coach to walk, no question.
Yeah, it is a really tough line to walk with them. When you look at the play of the defense, that doesn't make these decisions any easier, Ron.
Do we have to look at the play of the defense?
Well, I told Tom Bradley when he got the job. When Tom Bradley got the job in the secondary, I told him straight out, I said, I got good news and bad news. He said, what's the good news? So you're in the NFL. I said, what's the bad news? You're going to be coaching Artie Burns.
Yeah, it's been tough ever since Ryan Shazier got hurt in Cincinnati last year. He was their best player. Their defense wasn't great with them, but it was functional. Good enough to win a championship. And when he got hurt, it just totally fell apart. They didn't invest much in the offseason to improve the defense. They brought in John Bostic, who's with like 5 teams in 5 years as an inside linebacker. That's it. They did draft Terrell Edmunds, number 1. He's a safety. They really didn't do much to address the inside linebacker situation. And it's the same problems as last year, miscommunication. Guys just running wide open. I mean, I'm not talking about combat catches. I'm talking about guys being 5-10 yards in the clear making catches. And they're missing tackles. And I'm sure it's driving Tom Bradley crazy, I would think so.
Yeah, I would think. And, Ron, here's the next part. I want to get into Bell for a second. In all the years I've watched the NFL, and you may have heard or seen something different than what I have, I have never heard teammates, when a guy didn't show up the first time, actually say something about it that was at least inferred to be negative. And this time it did. What does that tell us about the players, their relationship with Bell and the Steelers?
Well, I mean, it wasn't slightly negative. They ripped them. I mean, David DeCastro said stay away all year. The players pouncy. I think they felt misled. You know, they understand business is business, and they knew he wasn't going to come to camp just like he did last year and didn't last year, and I think they were perfectly fine with that. But my understanding is he kind of led them to believe he would be coming in before the first game, and when he didn't, they jumped on him. Now, you know, players don't usually get into other players' business and contracts, but I think this was more personal from that standpoint. And my belief is when he shows up, if he shows up, you know, and they think he can help them win, they'll embrace him with open arms. These guys want to win because, you know, Ramon Foster says it best. He says, when you win, everybody eats. And I think they think he can still help them. But he's got to get here to do that. There's no indication it's going to be anytime soon. So now, you know, you got a star running back who isn't here, a star wide receiver who has been a distraction. It's not a good situation for these Steelers. It's the worst that I've ever seen during the Tomlin era. I think this game Monday night's his biggest challenge. They go 0-2-1. Chances of them making the playoffs aren't real good.
No, exactly right. There's a limited number of games in the NFL. I mean, you hit that point at 0-2-1 zero, with the zero on the left, you got a big, big problem moving forward. That's a lot of ground to make up.
And their schedule down the road is brutal. I mean, everybody thought they had to get off to a fast start. You figure you beat Cleveland in the opener, Kansas City at home with a new young quarterback. Tampa, you're not going to have Jameis Winston, but, Fitzpatrick's been the hottest passer in the league so far. I mean, you still got to play at New Orleans down the road, at Oakland down the road. You got New England coming here, Atlanta coming here. The schedule is brutal in the second half of the season. Your division games with Baltimore and Cincinnati, it's a brutal schedule.
What's been your thought on watching James Conner play? Now, the Conner is a different skill set as a running back than Bell, so that's an understanding right away. But what have you thought about Conner's play?
Well, he's been good so far, except, and it's a big except, he lost a fumble late in the Cleveland game, which basically cost them the game. They're ahead 21-7 with 7.5 minutes to go. They run it into the line 3 times and punt. I have no doubt they win the game. He fumbles. Cleveland picks it up and returns it to the 1 yard line. Now all of a sudden it's 21-14 and everything changed. He ran at 192 total yards. He's caught the ball really well. He's picked up his blitz protection, which was a weakness of his last year. But he's no Le'Veon Bell. And I don't know that there's another running back, maybe Todd Gurley in the NFL, who I would compare to Bell when he's right. So they're not as good a team without Le'Veon. And, I mean, I have great respect for James Conner as a person. We know what he's overcome with a serious knee injury, and he beat cancer. But he's not as good as Le'Veon for me. It's just a pretty simple thing. He's just not that type of player.
I mean, Ryan, you and I both know that for the most part, the Steelers have been drafting in the 22 to 32 range now for a long time, once in a while higher than that. Is it finally catching up to them, drafting that low?
Maybe. But Kevin Colbert, the GM here, will tell you no matter where you pick in the first round, you can't miss. You can't miss. And they missed with Jarvis Jones a few years ago. It looks like they may miss with Bud Dupree, who hasn't done much here. Artie Burns, as you mentioned earlier, Sean Davis. These guys on defense have a long way to go. And even if you're picking 23, 25, you can't miss on these top guys. Now, they found Antonio Brown was a 6th-round draft choice. I mean, they got Le'Veon Bell in, what, the second round. You know, they've done well with some of their lower picks, but you can't miss number one. You just can't.
And Ron, you're in a great position because not only can you write columns, but you can get reaction from the fans all the time because of what you've done with your talk show. What are the fans telling you?
Oh, man, they're angry. They're restless here. The majority of our calls, Tomlin has to go. Keith Butler, the defensive coordinator, has to go. Le'Veon has to go. I mean, they're angry. And Steeler fans are spoiled. They've had great success here. I mean, my goodness, Mike Tomlin has won double-digit games the last 4 years. 4 years. A lot of other franchises would kill for that, but as I said, they haven't got it done in the playoffs. And these people here are spoiled, and you know, it just isn't good enough to go 13-3 in the regular season and then lose a home playoff game to Jacksonville like they did last year. So the team, the fan base is pretty restless here. They booed the team pretty good at home the other day, and I'm just afraid they lose Monday night. It could get a whole lot uglier around here.
Are you surprised by all of this?
That they're this bad, that things have broken down this bad? Yeah, not really.
They've broken
down
this bad, and the fans are that way.
The defense we knew was going to be an issue going in. Now, they played Cleveland pretty good, but that was Tyrod Taylor. And we saw what Mahomes, who's a really good young quarterback, just picked them apart. They really didn't do much to help that defense. A lot of people here wanted them to just let Le'Veon Bell go and use that money to find some defensive players. They chose to go with him. I don't know that they thought he was going to do what he's done and hold out, you know, into the season. But I'm surprised that they turned it over six times in Cleveland, and they still were in the game. They won eight games last year by a touchdown or less, and the kicker won like four games for them with last-second kicks. He's already missed a chance to win the game in Cleveland with a field goal. He missed a field goal and an extra point on Sunday. I mean, nobody can figure it out from his standpoint. So they have issues. This is a real tough time for Tomlin. There's no question.
How have you felt about Roethlisberger's play?
Well, he had five turnovers in the first game, and you just can't do that. And they got off to a real slow start the other day. I think three and outs the first three series. And then he lost a fumble that the Kansas City picked up and ran in for a touchdown. It would have been 28-0, and it was a defensive holding penalty that nullified it. And then after that, Ben was spectacular. I mean, he brought him back to tie at 21, tie at 28, and then just couldn't keep up with the defense. I think he'd tell you he had a bad first game and was pretty good after those first couple series on Sunday.
Obviously, Ron, it's only the third career start for Patrick Mahomes. So, you know, we may feel differently about him in his third, fourth year. But what did you think watching him in person?
Oh, he was terrific. I mean, he just, you know, read their defense so well, found guys open, switched to plays where he knew he'd have good matchups, great arm strength. He can run. He's not a guy that is necessarily just looking to run, but if he has to, he can. I'm with you. Two starts, I got to see a whole lot more, but he couldn't have been much more impressive than he was on Sunday.
Hey, Ron, I know it's a lot going on, and you were able to give us a few minutes of time. I appreciate it very much.
Steve, anytime. I'll be up for the Ohio State game next week. Looking forward to seeing you.
Hey, stop downstairs. You know Hammer wants to see you, too.
Oh, I know. You guys are big time, though, for me. I'll make sure I do that. I look forward to seeing you, okay?
Same here, Ron. Thanks so much, my friend.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Ron Cook, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and also on the Fan in Pittsburgh as well. All right, we will come back with more in a moment. I feel like I owe you an apology.
For what,
Sean?
For what?
I feel like that was this a kind of segment that really massively depressed you.
Well, it's a reality check. I mean, it's the state of the Steelers right now as we speak. So,
I mean, is the meeting over yet? Because I mean, I think I'd like to get a read from the suit.
I can scoot out during the break and find out what's going on. I have not left my chair.
I mean, because you know, I'm sure his perspective. Like, for example, if I'm on the Titanic, he's the guy I want announcing. All right, we'll come back.
They're going to say, he's the guy once saying, I'm the king of the world.
Right there at the front. I'm the...
Get out of my way. I'm going to the front of the boat.
It's not funny. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
The Shikellamy Braves play on News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at WKOK.com.
Plenty of room to the 35, down to the 20, down to the 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Shikellamy!
Hi, it's Kevin Hearn. Join the coach, Dick Horn, and me Friday night as the Braves host Jersey Shore. The pregame starts at 6:30. Kickoff is at 7. Shikellamy Braves football on WKOK is sponsored in part by Sunbury Motors, Service First Federal Credit Union, and Slavinsky Law Offices.
And you've got that game coming up Friday night. You'll lead into Penn State and Illinois. They've got Jersey Shore coming up this weekend. Other games include Lewisburg at Shamokin on 100.9 The Valley and Berwick at Sealands Grove on Eagle 107. So those are the games we have coming up. And, of course, the Phillies. By the way, in the area of awful stories, how about the Iowa golf champion that was murdered? I mean, unbelievable.
Oh, the young lady from Iowa State. I think she won a Big 12 singles title, yeah. Lots of questions in regards to that as to, was she golfing alone or a drifter with a gentleman with no address in his 20s, was living in the woods not too far away from the golf course, and he was killed in broad daylight. Just an absolute, the camp, Ames is absolutely shell-shocked and just so shocked as to what happened.
Yeah.
Such a tragedy.
Incredible. It doesn't matter if she's golfing alone. That's, you should be able to golf alone.
Yeah.
And she was by herself, by the way. Broad daylight on a Monday morning. And they found her in a pond on the course near the ninth hole. Awful. I mean, just awful. Oh, boy. So many things that we should be able to do without even thinking about it. And then every time we turn around, something happens.
Yeah, allegedly someone who closely knows the person that allegedly did this, thought he'd heard something. He just wanted to plan on doing something terrible to somebody. That's just absolute sad. It's just truly awful. Absolutely sad.
Just absolutely awful. There's so many things. And we just went through, obviously, 9/11. You had 3,000 people that went to work that day in two locations. Now, the other crash, of course, was in a field, and 50 people died there. But got up that day, and they had all thoughts, and, they were either concerned about something or excited about something, and they had a whole day ahead of them, a whole week ahead of them, and so forth. And then you got a group of people out there that just don't give a darn about life at all. Just don't care about anybody else's life. You just, after a while, you get just so sick of that kind of attitude. You get so sick of that.
Oh, well. I read that today. I was just heartbroken by it. Mark Cuban was told by the NBA did not pay a close enough attention to the Maverick business culture. So he has agreed to contribute $10 million to women's organizations, but he's not going to face any other punishment from Commissioner Adam Silver. Of course, this had come up earlier. And so he's going to donate $10 million earmarked for organizations that promote women's leadership and development in sports, as well as those that combat domestic violence. The maximum that the NBA can find is $2.5 million. And so he's going to donate $10 million. So that's one story that came out today. I mean, it's really been, for the most part, in terms of other news like that, kind of a quiet day. The Athletic had a great article on the Phillies pitching in the organization. And I thought they did a great job in the article in The Athletic of really outlining what the Phillies have in their organization prospect-wise. And Matt Gelb wrote it. And he had an interesting... Hey, there are certain guys that fit a profile. Like, for example, Sixto Sanchez is considered a top-tier guy, but his season ended because of elbow soreness on June 3rd. Spencer Howard, they think he has the best raw stuff in the organization, former second-round pick. Right? Postseason no-hitter. They say his fastball tops at 98. These are guys to look for down the road. Adonis Medina, 21-year-old, Dominican right-hander. They really think highly of him.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Illinois play-by-play voice Brian Barnhart tomorrow. Also, Neil Coulong coming up tomorrow. Looking forward to having them on the show. Patrick Chambers on the show tomorrow. Then the show live from Champaign, Urbana. I think it's the first time we've ever done the show live on the road the day of a game for Penn State football. But that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, I figured why not, since it's the first Friday regular season game since 1982. Who knows when that'll happen again?
Was that what, Pitt?
You are correct.
Yeah, they used to have those Thanksgiving games where they play on a Friday. It's like, okay. And I think they usually had a week off before they did this. They didn't come back on a short week and play it. You know, Penn State in 2001 was supposed to play on a Thursday at Virginia. But that was the week of 9/11. The game was supposed to be September 13th, so we were supposed to fly on the 12th. Obviously, with 9/11, that got postponed to December 1st. One of the more significant wins Joe ever had. And some, you know, there were times when Joe, when I talked to him about it, would intimate that he might have thought it was the most important win of his career. It was that game at Miami in 1967. He was 5-6 as a coach at the time. 5-6 because they had lost the opener, I believe, to Navy. So now he's under 500. He's got to do something. So he just started... On that Friday, they played a Friday night game at Miami. Humid as all get out, the way he related it to me. And he just started putting in his sophomores, and play freshmen then, sophomores, one by one by one until they're all out there. And they beat Miami. And that started them on their way. It started them on their way to eventually being unbeaten in 31 straight games. So that was a Friday night game down at the old Orange Bowl. But
it's been rare. I mean, obviously some of the pick games were on Friday over the years, but yeah, I think, in fact, I think Penn State played on a Thanksgiving. I think Alex Van Pelt threw, I don't know, 60-something, 70-something times. Because I remember it was Thanksgiving. I was like, okay, you know, can we get out of here? I want to say it was like 1992 or something like that. We're down there forever. Maybe it was 1991. But just kept throwing the ball and throwing. It was like, huh. And of course, there were more than half of them. Or half of them were incomplete, so the clock kept stopping. It was like, yeah, this is really great. Turkey's getting cold. But there have been very, very few. You know, there's obviously been some kickoff classics that were on Monday nights. But, yeah. Been a while. Look, it's the Big Ten opener. And what Lovie Smith is doing is essentially what Joe did. He's in his third year. Last year, he just said, "The heck with it. I'm playing my kids." And they took their lumps last year. And guess what? They're a little bit better this year. And they're probably getting these guys back. Bennett Williams, Nate Hobbs, safety and corner, respectively. Lou Dorsey, the tight end. They're probably coming back from suspension this week. They haven't announced that, but you kind of get the feeling that that's what's happening. They missed the non-conference. Now it's the conference. So you sense they're going to be back. That'll make them better. Now, how they play, how rusty they are, how into the flow they are, we'll have to see. And quarterback-wise, Bush had been the starter the first two. MJ Rivers, because Bush had a hamstring, started. And you know what? I thought MJ Rivers played pretty well against South Florida. I mean, they had South Florida beat. They blew that game. Blew it. Completely blew it. An absolute blown coverage where I think the corner thought he had safety help and the safety never arrived. I looked at the play this afternoon. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. That's how they lost that game. I mean, I knew that's how they lost the game, but then you see it and you say, I can't believe they did that. The sidelines jumping up and down. You know, everybody's excited about what's going on. Okay, great. And then, boom, that happened. Because it was, I want to say it was like a 3rd and 15 or something like that. And, wow. That is a bad way to lose. But they had 21,000 fans at that game. Illinois has not been drawing for football. Now, basketball, no matter what, basketball. Now, this is not going to sound like much to you, but I remember doing a game at Illinois in basketball a few years ago. It was 2011, and they had a blizzard. I don't mean it was a bad snowstorm. You know, there's a definition as to what a blizzard is. They had a blizzard. That was the one we had to go into Evansville, and then we had to bus up from Evansville, which is hours, okay? And we got there in time for shoot-around, and then the game, and then it was snowing to beat the band when we went over. And and they still had 3,000 people show up for the game. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, except there's a blizzard outside. So when it comes to basketball, they redid that arena. They did a great job redoing that arena. And if it's basketball, they show up. Football, it's a tougher sell there. It is a much tougher sell football-wise at Illinois. Now, a game like this, they're hoping to, you know, kick it into another gear. You got a big opponent there. It's exciting. Penn State's going to be there. But that's what they're hoping for. That's what they're hoping for. And again, you know how I feel about the Friday night thing. I think college football should be played on Saturday. But again, I am as guilty as anybody. As guilty as anybody. Because if I'm sitting there on a Friday night, now there's not a lot of shows that to me are like shows I want to watch. There really are very few of them. I mean, it doesn't take one hand for me to pick it, tell you the shows that I go, okay, I'm going to watch that. One of them I do like is Blue Bloods on Friday night. Tom Selleck and the... Okay. That's at 10 o'clock. And, you know, usually I'll watch that. But, look, if there's a game on, it's a good game, on a Friday night, I'll watch it. Like Syracuse-Clemson last year. And, again, I've been thinking about that this week, that Syracuse-Clemson game. Syracuse supposed to be undermanned at home. They get, they, you know, they Clemson kind of keeps them in the game. Okay. Clemson's quarterback not playing well, then gets hurt. And all of a sudden, Clemson loses the game. Now, it didn't cost them getting to the college football playoff, but that is a scenario that can happen. And it got people excited about Syracuse football. And Syracuse just had a big win against a, right now what is a hapless Florida State team. But they did get it. And so these Friday night things can be, if you don't handle it right, can be difficult. But I'm against Friday night football because we just did a high school football roundtable, and I'm a big believer in Friday night football. We have to remember, too, that not every high school team plays on Friday night. There are a lot of teams in Pennsylvania that play their games on Saturday, too. Bishop McDevitt's a good example. They always play on Saturdays when they're at home. So that does happen, and there are some Saturday games that take place in Illinois, usually in the Chicago area. Chicago usually has a fair amount of Saturday games, but downstate has Friday night games in Illinois. And believe me, after that blizzard a few years ago, we had to go back and forth with that, to Evansville, Indiana. I got a good long look at downstate. Long look. I've been to downstate Illinois. But it does have that effect. But I'm as guilty as anybody. I mean, really, if I were to put people in a room that are football fans, and I asked them, hey, raise your hand, have you ever watched Friday Night Football on ESPN or Fox? And there'd be a bunch of hands go up because we're all guilty of, like, well, there's a game on. That looks pretty good. I think I'll watch that. I mean, you'll do it. Yeah, I know Sean's got to work, concentrate on getting everything ready for game night.
Yeah, if I wasn't here in studio running the seals and taking care of game night, sure. 9 chances out of 10, if it was a compelling matchup on TV, oh yeah, I'd have it on too. Yep.
I mean, you don't think that that Penn State playing at 9 o'clock on Friday night on TV, isn't going to draw an audience?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've got the DVR set. Of course, I'll be listening to you and Jack all the way home. After we're done with game night.
Well, now I'm going to have to try and be good.
Yeah, don't worry about there.
My goodness, the pressure. I'm overwhelmed by it.
As the window sticker says, no fear.
Yeah, I feel the pressure all the time.
No.
Well. Look, this is one of those where you feel like you have to get off to a good start. You're on the road. I think you've got to force Illinois to play from behind.
So do you think is this going to be an empty the playbook scenario for Lovie Smith all season long? I'm going to play the players, or they're going to get us as far as we possibly can. This could be, what, make or break season for Lovie?
I don't think it's a make or break season. Josh Whitman gave him a 6-year contract, and this is year 3. So I don't think Josh Whitman is anxious to make a change with Lovie Smith. I mean, Josh Whitman hired him 2 days after he got the job. And look, has he recruited some talent? Yeah, he's recruited some talent. The offensive line's not bad. Two quarterbacks I like. Two of the running backs, they play three. Two of the three I really like. I really like Epstein. I really like Corbin. Their wide receivers are okay. They're all right. Tight ends are okay. That's why if Dorsey comes back, he makes a difference. Dorsey's a pretty good player. Roundtree, 97, the defensive end, really good player. 35, Hansen, the linebacker, really good player. He's got more talent out there than they had before. And the two kickers are really good. Hayes, the punter, and McLaughlin, the place kicker, they're both really, really good. The problem is, against South Florida, there's an old saying, it takes three field goals to beat a touchdown. Well, against South Florida, that was the problem. They kept getting field goals. They got four field goals in that game. They only finished one drive. That was a killer for them in that game. Because they punch home another touchdown, it changes the dynamics of the game. But it takes three field goals to beat a touchdown. You keep stopping a team and letting them have field goals. Remember the Penn State-Michigan State game when Penn State won the Big Ten East? Game was 12-10 at halftime. Michigan State was winning at Beaver Stadium. Kick four field goals. They didn't finish any drives and then didn't score a point in the second half. Penn State won in a rout. But again, I mean, it takes five field goals to beat two touchdowns. And that's the ability to finish drives. It's something that Trace McSorley has been brilliant at. I mean, Penn State this year has scored, 24 times? A safety, one field goal, and 22 touchdowns. How about that? Now, obviously, it has not been murderer's row that they've played, but that's what they've been doing. That's finishing. I mean, Penn State this year is 16 for 16 in the red zone so far. It's one thing that's critical. It's a momentum thing. Illinois has been really good at getting turnovers. I believe they have forced a takeaway in 17 straight games, and they're a +5 giveaway takeaway this year. So they've taken good care of the ball, and they've been taking the ball away. So, I mean, that'll be important, especially that, you know, something like that can really get your crowd going. We'll see. James did something I thought was really cool. Frank DeLeo, walk-on from Elmhurst, Illinois. He is going to be making the trip. His parents have a restaurant in Chicago. And Frank's been, he's been a part of the restaurant, catering, the whole thing. And they're going to the game. The door is open, I think, for pizzas. All right, we'll take a break. I'm just telling you, you got to look at all angles, Sean. You just can't zero in on 3.9 yards a carry.
Can't turn down a slice of pie when it's that great.
No, when it's that great. And you just can't focus on 3.9 yards a carry. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, here we go, counting down to the end of today's show. Tomorrow on the show, we'll have Brian Barnhart, the play-by-play voice of Illinois. Neil Coulong on the Steelers. I'll bet that'll be enlightening. I feel like I'm torturing you.
No, we're good. That's just the state of the team right now as we speak. But it's only week three.
And Patrick Chambers on Coaches versus Cancer, but also on Penn State basketball. It's all in tomorrow's show. Looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. Then Friday's show will be live in Champaign, Urbana, but actually we'll be in Champaign. We will not be in Urbana. We will not cross over the line to Urbana.
And we'll figure out some what games we're going to do for our pick segment then for Friday.
Oh, yeah. We can do all sorts of pick-ems. It'll be great. There's some good games out there. Yeah. In fact, we can pick the Steelers-Buccaneers on Monday night.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Yeah. Maybe the Sioux can do a guest pick. And then we can all sit there and offer him some cheese to go with that big bottle of wine. They're awful. I miss the days of 3.9 yards in a cloud of dust.
It's not coming back through that door. He'll be at the restaurant. Well, speaking of former Steelers and restaurants, that's right. Franco Harris opened up a pizza restaurant right there at Heinz Field.
Yeah, he did.
Wonder how that did for the grand opening over the weekend for game one at home.
Oh, I'm sure there are a group of people right now that like flocked there in droves because they needed to find a respite. Some sort of escape after that magical performance. In fact, several of the Steelers' defensive players were seen there. All right, so some during the game. I'll tell you, I was looking at this article in The Athletic on the Phillies pitchers in the farm system. One I found to be intriguing, that's a double-A, Jojo Romero. Now, I watched Jojo Romero at Williamsport. Man, did I really like him. Good-looking prospect. Let's see what they do with him next year if they move him up to AAA at some point. Because he's going to be pretty good. Now, Sixto Sanchez, I mentioned, he's probably their top guy, but then he hasn't pitched since June 3rd. But they've got, I mean, these guys are all 21, 22, and 23. Bailey Falter, Connor Siebold, Damon Jones, Adonis Medina, Ramon Rosso, David Parkinson, Spencer Howard. Howard, they really like. Jojo Romero. Jojo's only 21. Right? I mean, they've got a bunch of guys. Zach Warren. I liked Zach Warren when I saw him. Will Stewart. Kyle Young. Now, Kyle Young I like, too. And those guys, and he, Kyle Young's only 20, and he is big. Young is 6. Oh, my goodness. I want to say he is 6. 8, 6, 9. That's great stuff. The Phillies have a lot of really, really good young pitchers in their system. Now, Zach Warren was with Williamsport last year. It was really, really good. He was not very good this year. Connor Brogdon, I liked him. Julian Garcia. Luis Ramirez. Phillies have a lot of really, really good arms that can really throw hard in their system. They really do. Now the question is, can they keep doing that? Future's bright, my man, in Philadelphia. They got a nice little four-year window here where I think they can make some hay.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.